With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/decide. That's linkedin.com/decide. Terms and conditions apply.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
It's overtime on 106.7 The Fan. Craig Hoffman with you tonight. And joining me now on the BetQL guest line is the owner, the majority owner, which becomes important for this conversation, of the Washington Spirit, Steve Baldwin. And I will journalistically disclose that I worked for Steve and the club for a year and still have a business relationship with them, as I'm the host of their podcast and coaches show. But Steve, we're starting like our relationship started with you here on Overtime on the radio. So welcome back and thanks for the time tonight.
Oh, it's my pleasure, Craig. It's always great to connect with you.
So the reason we're having you on in terms of timing, obviously it's an exciting time for the club. The regular season starts. The Challenge Cup was a great success. The preseason tournament that was in its second year, obviously it was kind of more of a regular season tournament last year. But the club announced today new ownerships, including the one and only Alexander Ovechkin. When did you guys reach out to Ovi, or did he reach out to you, and how did this partnership come together?
You know, it's interesting, Craig, since you've been around me some, you probably have insight into this, but I typically pull a thread on every relationship that we have within the club to see where they may lead to. And one of the investors that we announced in February, Kyle Learman, is friends with Alex's agent, David Abruton, and connected me with David in the February timeframe, I'd say. And so we started having conversations and shared what we were doing with the club and where we wanted to go. And Alex was interested in advancing women's sports, particularly here in his adopted hometown of D.C. It was something that was important to him and Nastia. And so that's kind of how it came together.
How do these partnerships with quote-unquote celebrity owners come together in general? Because this is something that is happening a lot in all of sports, specifically the women's sports. We've seen it in the WNBA. At this point, over half the teams in the NWSL have some kind of large ownership group with some high-stakes names. So how do these types of things come together? And then realistically, how do they work? Because it's not like you have 30 owners that have all an equal say. So how does it actually functionally work once it does happen?
Yeah, I can't speak for how everybody else is doing it, but for us, you know, if you go back to when I first came in the club, I've spoken often about how I viewed women's sports being different. And specifically what I was referring to is that we deal with a situation where 99% of sponsorship dollars goes to men's sports and 96% of media coverage goes to men's sports. And so I thought that it took a different approach and strategy to try to change those statistics. And for us, that meant that we felt like we had to grow our investor group. And in doing so over the last few months, we've kind of had three tracks that we were going down. The first one is increasing our reach and awareness and things like that. And that's what some of the celebrity aspects bring to us in terms of increasing our audience. The second piece of it is increasing our network. So by bringing the group of people in to the club that we have, we now have a greater network for business opportunities and sponsorships that we're pursuing. And the third piece of it is to really create an ecosystem of folks across a breadth of industries and disciplines to be of service to the players. And so that's kind of kind of the approach that we took in building the group. In terms of how we operate it, we've established four committees in which our investors will participate in. One is strategy and development. So you can think of that as business, new revenue lines, growing the business in that way. The second one is community. The third one is technology and media. So we have a great group of folks that cover the technology industry and have lots of media experience. So things we want to do in terms of building new technologies and content and media and things like that is the third piece. And the fourth one is what we call player services. And so it's really focused on how can we enrich the player experience here with us on and off the field. So that's kind of how it comes together and the strategy behind it and the expectation that we have for people that get involved with us.
Steve Baldwin, the majority owner of the Washington Spirit, with us here on 106.7 The Fan. Craig Hoffman with you tonight for overtime. So theoretically, there's going to be some kind of meeting where like Chelsea Clinton and Alex Ovechkin and others are on a Zoom or in a meeting room and actually really working on an issue of one of those four categories?
So we had a first investor call a few weeks ago now in which the folks that were in the first round participated in, and was really just kind of introducing everybody to each other and letting people learn about each other's backgrounds and how they hope to make an impact for us. You know, when we get back to some level of normalcy at Audi Field, we will open those field side suites that you experienced in 2019 to where the investors and other folks that we want to bring into the club, like corporate partners and things like that, can convene. And so that's kind of the way we look to get the group together from time to time. And you know, we have some other investors that are suggesting other ways of getting together going forward as well. Could be a pool party at someone's house, to a dinner, you know, who knows exactly every way it will come about. But yeah, there'll be numerous opportunities where the group convenes going forward to make a difference for the club.
I'd imagine in that group there's some pretty good pools to potentially have a pool party at. I know Bri Scurry loves her pool and has great pride in it, but I think she'll have some competition.
I think there'll be a lot of pool competition, you know, and that's a good thing. Maybe we'll set it up to where we have a pool party competition that the folks can host various events for us going forward.
I'm just thinking of your roster, and I feel like Sam Staub would want to be the queen judge. That's apropos of nothing, just knowing that roster and knowing that team. I just feel like Sam would want to be involved. So something to keep in the back of your mind, you know?
Yeah, you got it.
Speaking of your rosters, the regular season is starting to get going this weekend. I'm curious what you've actually, before you even get to the team on the field itself, what's the reaction been from the players? Because I know you and know what drives you. For those that don't, Steve's daughter is a high level player. And in many ways, the way you approach this is like, as if my daughter was playing for the team, because it's not a far fetched option in terms of what could be your reality. You approach this as if these were your own daughters, which is how you'd want any men's or women's sports owner to approach it, that you want the absolute best for the athletes and for the players. So obviously that's a motivating factor behind all of this. So how has it been received by the players, whether it's someone like Ovechkin, who is one of the best players ever in his sport, or Jenna Bush Hager, Chelsea Clinton on the political side, Bri Scurry, a legend in the sport, or some of the lesser known names that have made huge impacts in their fields, technology, science, et cetera?
Yeah, so it's the players have had a great reception to it. You know, it's one of the things that I've tried to be with the team from day one is transparent in the work that we're trying to do and why we try to do things. And, you know, sometimes they may not exactly understand every dot I'm trying to connect in the relationships that we build, but I think they have a lot of confidence that, what Michelle, Bill, and I work on related to, these types of things, that there's a very purposeful meaning behind it. You know, as it relates to some of the things that have already happened for the players from the relationships, and one of our new investors is Tracy Fitzsimmons, the president of Shenandoah University. And one of the partnerships that we announced earlier this year was with Shenandoah to provide our players free grad school in exchange for marketing that the club does for the university. And so we have players that are taking grad school courses that have already started to experience those things. We have one of our new investors is a gentleman named Jimmy Lin, who is an Asian American, and runs the among his duties is running the sports management program at Georgetown. And Jimmy has already done things with our two Japanese players, and he's also had some interaction with Andy Sullivan from a mentoring perspective. So, you know, it's in the infancy of, what we're doing, but you know, this group is a resource for the players to help make a difference in their lives as they go forward.
Yeah, and as you mentioned, it's in its infancy. In fact, it's seen zero regular season games because it does start this weekend. On the way out here, I know you're excited about the club. Of course, you helped put it together. That's kind of your job. But what makes you so excited about this upcoming season, and how has that either been confirmed, or what questions do you have moving forward after the Challenge Cup, where obviously you had Kelly O'Hara and Emily Sonnet, two of your, certainly your two most notable offseason acquisitions, but two of your best players out for a large portion of that because of national team duty?
Yeah, as we come into this year, I think if I compare this roster to the past 2 years, we're much deeper. And I think that's going to be important because we have a, longer season this year. So we've had four games in the preseason Challenge Cup. We will have 24 regular season games, and then the playoffs and, championship. And it is a grind. So you need to have a lot of depth. And I feel like we've been able to put that in place so Richie can do some roster rotation and things like that during the course of the year to keep players fresh. I think you know, the biggest thing that we have to enrich as we move forward is our goal scoring capability, and so, you know, that's something we're going to continue to look for possible additions to the roster as we move forward. But we're really excited about the roster this year. You know, we've added some senior leadership and experience through the two national team players that, you mentioned. We added some additional youth and an incredible rising star in Trinity Rodman, who has a ceiling that is really, really high. And so we're excited about her prospects for us this year. And we're seeing the continued maturation of the young group that we started to build in 2019 and added in 2020 with players like Jordan DiBiase, Sam Staub, Ashley Sanchez, Nat Jacobs, Tegan McGrady, Dorian Bailey. You know, it's a really good group. I hated that we lost Bailey Feist and Avery Collins to ACL injuries during the preseason, but we're as deep as much deeper than we've ever been, and we're really looking forward to the season kicking off this week.
Can't wait for it. Excited to be back at Audi Field and witness it, and appreciate all the contact we've had over the last couple of years, and excited to see you continuing to grow everything, just like you said, right here on the radio a couple years ago.
All right, Craig. Well, hey, I appreciate the time. It's great to get together with you anytime.
Steve Baldwin, the majority owner of the Washington Spirit, with us here on the BetQL guest line on 106.7 The Fan. Their season starts actually this weekend, Sunday night. The game is against Orlando at Orlando, and then tickets are available if you want to go catch a game at Audi Field. It really is an amazing stadium. DC United plays there, obviously, and the games are great for them. Spirit games are a lot of fun, so if you're a soccer fan, like, go check it out.
It'll be the home debut in a couple weeks for Kelly O'Hara and Emily Sonnet, two national team players that you probably watch play for Team USA in the 2019 World Cup. All right, coming up next, I'd like to address a tweet by my cousin Jason. He has made a grand proclamation, and I need to evaluate it. The question boils down to this. What pocket do you put your keys in? They say don't let Twitter produce the show, but sometimes Twitter is just too good to not let produce the show. Craig Hoffman with you. This is Overtime on the Fan. I have a tweet from the Food Network, and I have a tweet from my cousin Jason, who's a producer at CNN. He's got a blue check mark, which is nice. Ryan, dealer's choice. Do you want the Food Network tweet that's going to stir debate, or would you like the tweet from my cousin Jason involving keys?
I want your cousin's tweet. That's what I really want. Because I think I know what tweet you're talking about from the Food Network.
Okay.
I think.
Yeah, probably. It's currently the hottest debated question on the internet, I think. So I gotta pull this one up because I have the Food Network tweet up. And I wanna get this exactly right. Let's go to my likes. All right. At Jason Hoffman 93. Jason, a White House producer for CNN. I've learned some people keep their phone in their right pocket and keys in their left pocket, and it would suck walking around so wrong all day, every day. Ryan, do you have your keys on you right now?
I mean, they're not, like, on me. They're beside me, though.
Okay, well, that doesn't really help us. Because I also do not have my keys currently on me. And in fact, in the Lululemon shorts that I'm wearing, because I am bougie like that, I don't have a right pocket. I only have a left. So that would be kind of irrelevant.
That is the bougiest thing I've ever heard. Well, you only have one pocket.
They're workout shorts. So they have like a phone pocket that you can stick your phone in when you go running. But they're not designed to like, I am a lazy person who wears athleisure at all times. And so these shorts aren't really designed to like wear when you're going out to do stuff.
I hear you, man.
So I just, what do? I wear them anyway, and I have a backpack because I named my laptop, and I just put my wallet and my keys in my backpack. Anyway, do you ever pay attention to what pocket your keys are in?
I mean, so I keep it around my neck, and that's where...
Oh, you're a lanyard guy.
I'm a lanyard guy, definitely. And the reason why
How old are you again?
21.
Okay, that's fair.
So, yeah, exactly. I'm kind of like just going through that phase, and I feel like just having a...
So when you grow up and you're going to be an adult, what pocket are you going to put your keys in?
What pocket? I'm always a right pocket guy because, okay. You know, I'm a righty in everything I do. So okay. It's like, it's just easier to feel around right there. But then also I keep it on my neck because I lose stuff all the time.
Yeah, that was the way I was in college. I can't even, like we had IDs that we had to use for all of our dorms and stuff. And it was just easier just because you had to swipe everywhere, dorms, buildings. And so it was just easier. Then, like, that was at Middle Tennessee State. And when I transferred to Syracuse, those were, like, the touch IDs. So then you could have it in a wallet, which I forgot half the time, and that sucked. My initial response, my initial thought was, like, who cares? But then Jason said this. People, keys in front right because the ignition on a car is front right. Phone front left, wallet back right. Simple stuff. It's impeachable logic, except for the fact that how long does it really take to transfer your keys from your left to your right hand?
That's a lot of time to waste right there. I mean,
a fraction of a second?
A fraction of a second?
As you get in the car and are not possibly doing anything else? Plus, you typically keys in 2021, 2020, going back to the 1990s, have the remote lock. Maybe not the 90s. 2000s. Have the remote. Do you even remember a key where you'd have to like go up to a car and twist it?
Of course. I had one of those.
Okay. Because your car was very old.
Exactly.
But if you have a remote, you're typically going to pull your keys out anyway as you're walking to your car. So I just think it's too much to have that hard of an opinion on.
I definitely see what you're saying with it.
But here's my real contention with the follow up tweet. Wallet never in the back pocket. Because you sit down and it's just uncomfortable. Wallet, no. Just like put it in your side pocket. Plus, it's easier to get pickpocketed if it's behind you.
That is true. That is a good point. I always have it in my side pocket. Plus,
do you know
what
I'm going to do? I'm going to pickpocket Jason now.
Yes, that's a great...
That's where this topic ended.
That is a great idea.
Also, by the way, I should also add this. So many cars now, you don't even need the keys to start it. It's just remote starts. They stay in your pocket, so it doesn't really matter. So there's that, too. That was a strong take. Okay, Food Network tweet. And then Maria Torres talking Nats, because technically we're a sports station. Grilled cheese or PB&J, which is the ultimate sandwich? That is, the Food Network put that out. The internet is on fire. It is a great question. Often these questions are terrible. This is actually a great question. Thoughts, quickly. You have 15 seconds. Go.
PB&J, 100%. End of story, period.
Okay, that is, you had 9 more seconds, but that's fine. I will take those 9 seconds to say, I think you are correct. Because, well, a gourmet grilled cheese, higher ceiling. PB&J, far more consistency. You can have it on any kind of bread. You can use any kind of jam. You can have any kind of peanut butter, crunchy, smooth, whatever. It's still going to be pretty good. Grilled cheese, like, it's still going to be good, but it's also often unsatisfying. Because you're like, I would need 7 of these to get full. PB&J fills you up. It's fantastic. I think PB&J is the right answer. But higher ceiling, definitely grilled cheese. Okay, that's the thought. That was easier than the keys thing. All right, coming up next, Maria Torres from The Athletic talking Nationals. It should have been a good weekend. It wasn't. What does she make of it all? That's next on The Fan.
It's overtime on 106.7 The Fan. Craig Hoffman with you tonight. And joining me now on the BetQL guest line is Maria Torres of The Athletic. Maria, thanks for your time. Always appreciate you.
Yeah, no problem, Craig. Thank you for having me.
So this weekend, not exactly a banner weekend for the Nationals and specifically for their closer, Brad Hand. I thought one of the quotes that was super interesting and one of the really interesting things from Davey Martinez was his lack of trust in Hand at this point, that he thought about walking Giancarlo Stanton to load the bases, you know, obviously create the force out, create a double play opportunity, all that stuff in the 9th inning yesterday, and said he couldn't trust Hand to not walk in the winning run. What does that say about the Nats closer situation, and what options does Davey have?
Yeah, that is definitely a very good quote, and is telling about what was happening in that moment with Hand. He wasn't locating his fastball particularly. He just couldn't find the strike zone. I think that the Nationals do have a couple fallback, mostly one. Actually, it's pretty much one fallback option right now, and that's Daniel Hudson. Who's been pretty solid all season. He has given up a lot of hard contact, but fortunately for him, it's not really fallen for much damage. That said, I don't think that he's going to be given any more save opportunities in Hand, just because, Martinez is also someone who is very much, you know, trusting of his guys until it becomes, impossible to trust them. And with Hand, it's hard to really say, like, you know, after two outings on like consecutive days, on 2 days that were kind of rainy, like, it's hard to say for sure that, you know, something's really going wrong. I would say, like, maybe if, like, in a week or two and things haven't started to improve with him, then you really definitely start to reconsider, like, the back end of the bullpen. But judging by what was said yesterday, both before and after the game, I think that the Nationals are going to continue to give Hand the opportunity to save games for them.
What have you seen? One of the things I love about reading your work is you get into the data, and sometimes baseball is such a finicky game. You hit a ball hard, it goes right at someone, it's an out. You make, you know, terrible contact, ball dribbles in the right place, and that's a hit, and you know, the stats reflect that. But you take a deeper dive a lot into the data. You know, you had some great stuff on Kyle Schwarber's home runs. If people are following Maria on Twitter, they saw that. But what have you seen from Hand's actual performance that is suggestive that he's going to turn it around, or that this could continue to be a problem?
Yeah, thanks so much for saying that. Yeah, I think with Hand, the biggest thing right now, between Saturday and Sunday's outings, I noticed like there was a dip in velocity in his fastball velocity, probably like about a mile an hour, which maybe is something to like kind of flag. But I wouldn't worry too much about it yet, just because, like, for the most part this season, his fastball velocity has been up, which is, that was a really big concern, especially from fans. I remember reading a lot of fan comments that they weren't confident that, you know, that Hand could get his velocity back because it has been trending downward for the last few years. However, he did start the season, like, somewhere in the 93, 94 range with his fastball, which is just an uptick already. And that kind of gives me the sense that that pitch can continue to improve as the season goes. And then, of course, you know, his slider is obviously his best pitch, and it's been pretty good pitch so far for him. So I think that because of those two things, that, you know, I think that Han is still on the right track.
Maria Torres of The Athletic with us here on The Fan. The other part of that equation, in going back to that quote we mentioned off the top, is Davey himself. You know, he gets chooses intentional walk earlier in the week against Atlanta. Twice it backfires. Yesterday he chooses no intentional walk. That doesn't wind up working out. Where does how confident is he in his own decision making right now? Even if he is someone who's gonna play the average, he's gonna play the data, and that's why the data exists. Right. But man, when you choose the wrong side of it that many times in a row, human nature is to doubt yourself a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, that's a question. Unfortunately, I can't answer. I don't really know what he's thinking about those things, but it is kind of an interesting point to make, because, like, it has backfired a lot. I think I feel like I remember, like, watching those early part of the season. I wish I'd written all of these things down, but, like, I felt like there were a lot of intentional walks that just didn't turn out the way that they could have. Just like you said, playing the averages, playing the numbers, thinking that things would work out in their favor, and they just really haven't when it comes to those. And I don't know. I don't know, like, what that does for someone's, like, you know, confidence in their you know, just in their workflow. Like, I understand why he didn't want to, you know, walk Stanton at that point. But at the same time, like, what else? I mean, you probably should have taken the chance. I mean, if you were going to blow it, right? Like, I don't know. It's hard. It's hard. It's just like, you can't predict what's going to happen. So I just don't know. I can't answer the question, really.
Yeah, it's, I mean, the data exists, but it's not like they're hard and fast numbers. It's going to work X percent of that time. And that X is not 100, then that means sometimes you're going to be wrong. And Davey's unfortunately found himself on that side of the equation a couple times in the past week. You did a piece on The Athletic, as Maria Torres from The Athletic is with us. 26 thoughts on the 26 Nats players right now. And the first one is Trey Turner. And you talk about his strikeout rate and how it was among the top 10% of hitters last season, but back to league average this year. What has changed for Trey that he is striking out more often when he's a guy that is so obviously a part of the Nats' success when he can just get on base?
Yeah, I think that one of the big things is that he is just being more aggressive. I wish I remember right now off the top of my head exactly, like, what percentage of pitches he's swinging at, but I have a feeling that he's probably taken hacks at, like, pitches that maybe he might not have last year. You know, the thing about this, like, higher strikeout rate that he has right now is that, like, it's paired with, like, also an increase an increase in, like, his exit velocity, if I'm not mistaken, his hard hit rate. So in a way, it's almost like you're selling out, but at the same time, it's working well for him. So I don't think it's anything really to be too concerned about. I know, I remember at the beginning of the season, I was trying to find this data yesterday and I couldn't, I'm not sure where to find it yet, but, I remember like there were a lot of, like, strike three calls too, that were maybe kind of questionable, that really got him, that really hung him up. And I remember him, like, walking back to the dugout, like, upset about a couple of those calls. So I'd really like to find out, like which number of, or which percentage of these strikeouts have come on, like, those borderline pitches for him, because it kind of gives you a sense then too that, like, even though he is striking out, like, he's still being very, like, selective about what he's going after. And, you know, perhaps in some cases it's been kind of unfair product.
Yeah, absolutely. And I imagine we were talking about the psyche with Davey in decision making. If you're a hitter and you only have less than a second to decide, and you can't trust what you're seeing because you think you've been on the bad end of calls. I'm sure that's messing with him a little bit too. Yet he's still hitting over 300 and having a fairly productive season. Another guy that you wrote about, you wrote about all of them, so obviously you wrote about this guy, but one that caught my eye as I was reading is Starlin Castro. And I just remember when he came up and the hype, and then he kind of bounces around a little bit and just never panned out into this superstar that so many thought he would be as a minor league prospect. Now with the Nationals, and is all of a sudden having a really good season. What have you seen from him, getting to cover him every day, that has impressed you so far?
Yeah, I actually think that he's he's been like pretty productive his whole career, honestly. I mean, I think especially of late, you look at his numbers besides last year, he was among league leaders in hits a lot of the time, and he's just someone that you can always count on to get on base. He's not going to hit for a lot of power, but he is at least an on-base machine. And like, that's something that you need at that part in the order. Need someone who can kind of keep the line moving and it kind of make it a little bit more difficult as you get further into the lineup. So I think with him, it's just that ability to kind of just like swing at anything and like almost always like make contact on something. I know that like Davey's talked in the past about like, you know, kind of trying to reel him in a little bit and like not offer at everything just because he can get to it. So he does need to be a little bit more selective, but I do think that, you know, for the most part, like he's someone that you can, at least more often than not, trust to get on base. And that's really big because that kind of makes it a little bit tougher for, you know, the guys ahead of him, for pitchers to like kind of pitch around the guys ahead of him. You know, if we're talking about like that, you know, the concept of depth, you know, he's usually batting behind like Bell and Schwarber. So granted that those guys are not doing well right now, but, you know, it kind of makes it a little easier or a little more difficult for opponents to kind of pitch around just to get to Starlin Castro.
And last question for you is, Maria Torres is with us here on The Fan. This team obviously was built around its starting pitching. The biggest financial investment is there, and obviously Scherzer is one of the biggest investments in that. And that contract was given at a time, and I'm rehashing this, I don't know why, everyone understands, like that contract was given at a time where he was better than he was now and a different pitcher than he was now, knowing that maybe at the end you don't get max Scherzer, if you will, maximum Max Scherzer. Yet here he is in 7 starts with a 2.33 ERA, and you wrote about this changeup that is all of a sudden improved. How sustainable is this level of success for Max Scherzer? Not the same guy that we used to see get throwing 98-99, but still right, finding ways to be effective.
Yeah, I think that one is big. I just remember at the beginning of spring training, Max was talking about how he went and looked back at like video and at data, and he kind of noticed that he just wasn't finishing his pitches the way that he really wanted to last season. And you know, you guys saw, I wasn't here, I wasn't really paying too much attention to the Nationals last year, but you know, you did see a bit of an increase in ERA, and you know, just generally not as good of a season as he had put together in previous years. And I think one of those things is probably that changeup, because it is, I mean, it's notably better. And I haven't had the chance to ask him specifically about that pitch, but you know, obviously his top two pitches are the fastball and the slider. But when he has like his entire like secondary arsenal working, like it has the last couple of starts, that's how you know, like, you know, that Max isn't really done like being Max. Like, you know, you can get a lot of guys who can, as they lose, like as they age, you know, their arsenal just kind of like fades, and it becomes like, you know, it could drop down to it's mostly just a two pitch selection that they're really relying on most days. But with Max, like for the most part, he's like able to like throw his 5 pitches like pretty well, pretty regularly, like throughout the season. You know, there was one start he made this season against the Blue Jays where he didn't really have anything, he didn't really have much like his whole arsenal working. He was basically going just fastball, slider with a couple of like changeups, curveballs and cutters mixed in. And that was one of those days that just wasn't like, he just couldn't have, he didn't have a feel for it early on, and therefore he couldn't really mix them in as much as he wanted. But the thing with the rest of his starts is that he has been able to mix those things in, and it helps a lot when, you know, you're trying to, you know, yeah, you're making up for the fact that you don't have a 98 mile an hour fastball, but like, you know, you do have a really decent like changeup, really good other secondary pitches too. So, you know, it's just a variety keep the hitters guessing. That's what he likes to say.
Yeah, watching Max just compete over the years, it's no surprise that he has been able to figure something out. It just always seems like the guy he is that no matter what challenge is put in front of him, he's going to find a way to overcome it. So that's cool to see him do that this year. You can follow Maria at Maria Torres, or excuse me, at Maria underscore Torres 3, and read the piece at The Athletic for the other thoughts on the Nationals players, 26 thoughts on 26 Nationals players after a rough weekend at Yankee Stadium. Maria, always appreciate the time here on the radio, and certainly talk to you down the road as the season continues to go.
Sounds great, Craig. Thank you so much for having me on.
Maria and all of our guests tonight, Steve Baldwin, Sam Pell, Damon Mendolara, all on the BetQL guest line. Bet better, beat the books. Download the BetQL app today, or bet smarter, beat the books. Better, smarter, it's the same thing. Whatever. Coming up next, I'm sure the sponsor's thrilled with that. Whatever. Do it better. Download the app. When we get back, Kenny Mayne has announced today that he is out at ESPN. So we'll have some fond memories and a funny Kenny Mayne story that almost caused a real fight in my life with one of my friends in college. Plus DK Metcalf. Was he running fast or not? That's next on The Fan. Craig Hoffman with you on 106.7 The Fan for one more singular segment on this little show we call Overtime. Russell Westbrook trying to make history tonight, and he is on his way. Played 20 minutes in, or almost 20 minutes in the first half. Damn near got a double-double, of course. A triple-double puts him in the all-time lead for triple-doubles in league history, passing Oscar Robertson with 181. He has currently right now, with 9:50 to go in the third quarter, 14 points, 9 assists, 5 rebounds, all of them defensive. The Wizards are trailing by 3 against the Atlanta Hawks. So, obviously, we'd keep you updated, but the show ends in 10 minutes. Trae Young, by the way, 10 points, 6 assists for Atlanta. John Collins had 18 in the first half for, and Clint Capella had a Russell Westbrook kind of half, 6 points, 15 rebounds so far in this game. So, Kenny Mayne has announced on Twitter, because that's where you announce things these days, that he is leaving ESPN. I will read the tweet because it is very Kenny Mayne. It is funny. It is heartfelt. And he's one of a kind. I am leaving ESPN, salary cap casualty. Thanks for the opportunity, Vince Doria and Al Jaffe, and for taking my solicitations. Herman, Stinton, Lynch, I will miss the people. I will miss the vending machine set up over by the old Van Pelt joint. We had everything. Into the great wide open. Hashtag. Kenny always puts his hashtags last. A uniquely brilliant sportscaster who I think sometimes people think is doing way more shtick than is reality. It's not shtick. It's just his sense of humor and who he is. He's incredibly nice. He's also incredibly thoughtful and smart. In some ways, Kenny, there's some of the way I felt about Stuart Scott is how I've come to feel about Kenny Mayne. And that is that I wish I appreciated them much more when I was younger. Obviously, with Stu, that takes on a different meaning as he passed. God, at this point, was it like 5 years ago? Which is insane. But Stuart, and obviously Stuart had so much going on with cancer and so much more. But just if we take away kind of that for a second, the uniqueness of the skill that they had and how they applied it to what at the time was the pinnacle of sports media, the very unique and skillful writing that Stuart Scott had and the way he would write his lead-ins. And as someone who's done a lot of update anchoring over the years and the occasional television hosting, but some radio hosting as well, where I do some scripted things, like the chance to be creative is and also effective is always there, but rarely ever taken, and less often taken well. And guys like Stuart Scott and Kenny Mayne did that on a level that, as someone who does those things, I just wish I appreciated even more when I was younger. And Kenny's style was so different than something like Stuart, but the way he would say so little yet say so much, the way he could be funny and humorous while also still getting you the information, there's nobody that's ever done the job of SportsCenter anchor like him. And the incredible dry wit that he would do a show with, I'd imagine was nerve-wracking. But he was such a good dude that I saw like Randy Scott and some of the other SportsCenter anchors that are a little younger and have come on since the heyday of SportsCenter in the 90s and worked with guys like Kenny who were on at that time and made SportsCenter into what it is. They would talk about how nice and great Kenny was to work with. But I would imagine just like having to respond and be the other guy in, or girl in the chair would be you just on your toes. I mean, in some ways, in a different way, Danny would get totally red-faced and blushed by me saying this to him. In some ways, it's like doing a show with Danny because Danny's a stand-up comedian. And you have to be like, I remember the first time I did a show with Danny and I was like, whoa, where are we going? And that is like what I imagined doing a show with Kenny Mayne was. And so I remember in college, I was watching a SportsCenter show. Actually, it might have even been in high school, but it's a thing that just always stuck with me. And I remember watching a show and it was Kenny and John Anderson and the lights went out in the studio. This is ESPN. This is the Mecca. This is SportsCenter. Probably the 11 p.m. It's the show. And the freaking lights go out. And what does Kenny do? He just goes, oh no, the lights are out. Someone set a possum on fire. That's what the Mountaineers used to do. We'll be fine. And so my dumbass files that somewhere in my brain. And in college, I did a show with a guy who probably wound up producing shows for Kenny at some point. Alex Brewer, a dear friend, who is now a producer at ESPN, but he was my co-host on my radio show in college, and Alex was from Maine. And at some point during one of our dumb college radio shows, something happened where I said the phrase, yeah, you just light a possum on fire. That's how you get your warmth in your house in Maine, right? Implying that people in Maine didn't have electricity. And Alex was legitimately mad at me for a week. Which I think still is hilarious because he thought I was serious. I wasn't. I was quoting Kenny Mayne. So that's fun. I did meet Kenny a couple years ago at Super Bowl Media Day. Shook his hand. Like, hey, Craig. He's like, hey, I'm Kenny. I'm like, I'm aware. Couldn't have been nicer. And it's cool seeing so many of the people in the industry express their gratitude for a guy who is a true original, a true frontiersman, who probably never actually had to set any possums on fire. So hats off to Kenny Mayne for a great run at ESPN, and I hope his sports media career is not done because that'd be a loss for us all. Thanks to all our guests for calling in. My name's Craig. Ryan, great job, sir. This has been Overtime on the Fan. CBS Sports Radio is next.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
What up, y'all? It's your boy Danny Green, 3-time NBA champ. You either rooted for me or rooted against me. Join myself and my co-host Harrison Sanford on the Inside the Green Room podcast.
It's a podcast that brings you never-before-told tales from the locker room to candid interviews with basketball legends to breakdowns of what's happening in the NBA right now. Whether you're a diehard fan or casual about your hoops, this podcast brings you the game like never before.
Follow Inside the Green Room on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.